You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 17 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Lisa Freon, she MD of Merchant West Investments. BHP Group update yesterday. It really is all about copper and iron ore. And these are the minerals of the future in many ways. I want to get thoughts on BHP, but also Anglo-American. Is there perhaps a preference? And if we have a moment, Karoo Q1 results. Any thoughts on that? Hello Giosi from First Avenue Investment Management on his flying geese theory on EM domestic champions taking their business overseas. And then thoughts from me on the IPO hype cycle and how it seems to be throwing retail investors under the bus the last couple of months. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Toyota's multi-billion rand vote of confidence in SA, but it still wants policy change, says it won't be able to increase the level of local content in the new Toyota Hilux without the change. Business Day, SA has edge in critical minerals, but logistics hold it back, says Moody's. Rating agency says country captures only a fraction of the value from its mineral wealth. Morning markets, US is red, S&P down 0.5%, Nasdaq 1.6% lower. The East is all red. We've got Sydney down 0.4%, Tokyo having a pounding off just over 4%, Hong Kong rather down 2%, Tencent 3.8% lower. Commodities all red, gold futures $4,002 an ounce, Brent 84.81, platinum 1,619, palladium 1,252. The rand is 1,646 and Bitcoin is 63,600. Top 40 opening call, red open, 1,030 points down or 1% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alyssa Freon from Merchant West Investments, where she is, of course, the MD. Alyssa, appreciate the early morning time. PHP Group coming out yesterday. Record iron ore, copper. I thought it's a 2 million tons mined. Giant numbers all around. Your thoughts? Because I think it's fair to say that these are two of the important minerals going forward. Copper is everything around AI, whether it be chips or memory or whatever. And, of course, iron ore is still... Without it, nothing gets built. Thoughts on the update?
Agreed. Morning, Simon. And what we are seeing is there's two different stories here. There's a copper story and there's an iron ore story. And they're actually telling very different expectations. So at BHP, they did release their results yesterday and it looked quite like a strong finish. So they produced 2 million tons of copper and also record iron ore. Mm. But I think what was really interesting about the result was actually the price and not so much the volume numbers. Because when we look at that copper price, their own copper price was up about 35% on the year. So they got paid really well for what they have been mined. And BHP, they did guide that actually they would produce a bit less copper because the grades that they are producing in that big Escondida mine in Chile is actually falling. So you've got these falling grades, falling volumes, expectations, but now you're in an awkward position because the copper prices are increasing. So I think you've got these record copper prices and they are going to be mining slightly less. So I think there's a bit of tension in this. And that's the theme is copper and iron ore are heading in opposite directions. So copper, it's quite scarce. It's near record highs and the world needs it for power grids. Like you said, they need it for electric cars and AI data centers. I think that's really where most of this demand is coming from. And there's just not enough supply coming online. And iron ore is the opposite. So it's quite soft. And it's likely to stay under pressure as sort of these big new mines in Africa come on stream. So you've got a lot of supply coming on for iron ore. And I think really there's a lot of excitement on copper. And then in terms of sort of Anglo-American versus BHP, I think everyone wants to think about that. I think it depends on what you really want. So BHP, they are saying more diversified. So they're saying we want copper, iron ore, coal, and they're soon doing potash as well. But Anglo is actually going the opposite way. So they're saying we're taking one bet. They are going to exit the Beers diamonds. They're selling off the platinum and coal and nickel businesses. And now they're also potentially merging with a Canadian company called Teck. And they will probably become sort of that pure copper play. And when they merge with Teck, it will make Anglo Teck the top five copper producer in the world. So they're just taking a punt on copper. Yeah. Yeah. So I think if you want a clean copper bet, you go with Anglo. But if you want a more diversified company, I think BHP is probably a safer bet because you've got this cash generating business and a quite a diversified business model.
Yeah, man, it's embarrassing. I always forget about the potash business that they're building. I remember when they tried to do an acquisition, 15 plus years ago, which failed. Let's move on, because I get your point. They're important minerals, and I like the clear distinction between the two, which then brings me to Karoo with all the O's. They had their first quarter update. Of course, I think locally we know it best for Cartrack, but they've got Asian operations. They're in Europe, a little bit in the US. Market liked it. Stock almost back at highs, above R1,000 a share. Your thoughts on Karoo? Of course, we've got Netstar as well sitting within the Ultron stable.
Agreed. And when I look at Karoo, I think about this as a great growth story sitting right here at home. Karoo, they did report their first quarter results and it looked really strong. So revenue was up about 22%. And I think what was really important was those subscriber numbers have been just ticking up. So subscribers went past about 2.8 million. And they saw sort of that net sign-up numbers were at record highs. So they actually signed up about 70% increase in the quarter. Mm-hmm. So they are, and when we're looking at all of these divisions, they, like you said, they've got divisions out globally. But South Africa was really the fastest growing of them all. And profit did come in above analyst expectations. But Simon, what we did see was actually the share did take a little bit of a dip yesterday. So now I'm thinking to myself, the results were really good, but the share price took a little bit of a dip. And that's because the cash flows actually came down. And what we saw here was they're simply actually spending money to sign up those new customers. And I don't think that's a problem. It's just them investing in the future. In the future sort of income. And management did keep their full-year targets in place. So I think it is looking really positive there. I think the dip is really coming from profit-taking after a strong run. So they were up about 22% year-to-date. So I think a lot of firms are just taking profit there. So it really is a business that we like. It's a high-quality business. It's got recurring income. The profits are real. They did have a bit of a negative sort of result because of the rand strength. I think they're just quietly compounding year over year. So really good business from Zach Callisto.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I chat with Zach, I mean, to your point, they spend on acquiring customers, but they make money from those customers. So it's an upfront expense, but that revenue and the profit does absolutely, we can see it in the numbers. We'll leave it there. Celissa Froon, she is MD Merchant West Investments. Appreciate the early morning time this morning. And our poll today on LinkedIn is back to that BHP group results as they concentrate on that iron ore, on that copper, two of the minerals for the future. But is it best in class? Have your vote, have your say. LinkedIn. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Gelo Giosi. He is a CIO at First Avenue Investment Management. Gelo, always appreciate the time. Your flying geese theory, you were recently in London, you were presenting on this. You're talking around sort of emerging market domestic champions when they solidify their base at home and then take the business overseas. Talk to me broadly about the concept here. In essence, what you're saying is they kind of get really good at what they do before they look to spread the wings and take on more global opportunities.
Good morning, Simon, and thank you for having me, by the way, as usual. You know, a really great example of of a flying goose coming out of South Africa is Outsurance.
Yeah.
Look at how Outsurance disrupted the local market. It innovated, perhaps even copied from Progressive Corporation in the United States, a direct-to-customer non-life property casualty insurance model that's very low cost. It has no intermediaries, not heavily brokered, and it just consumes a local market. Santam realizes, oops, I am heavily brokered. I have to have a similar model. They start my way. But by that time, Outsurance has dominated their local market so much with very high underwriting margins between 20-25%. And then they go to Australia. They take their competitive advantage. You have to take competitive advantage. You can only compete on your competitive advantage. They take it to Australia. They dominate there. Now they're in Ireland, and they just keep taking this competitive advantage that allows them to dominate the profit pool in their industry all around the world. And this concept really came from an economist called Akamatsu back in 1939, when he described what Japanese companies were doing to first develop in textiles, and then steel, then automobiles, and then chemicals, and then electronics. And then companies like Sony started to fly outside of Japan, went to Southeast Asia, went to newly industrialized economies like Singapore, like South Korea, and now Vietnam and so on. Before you know it, Toyota became the champion of this game. So today, Toyota makes more cars outside of Japan than it makes in Japan, and then it re-exports them into Japan. And when you look at how much Toyota has outperformed the car index in the MSCI All Country, it's by country miles, because it did that. Had it not done that, it would have been stuck in Japan, probably very low returns, probably very complacent, probably a very stodgy company with no future.
And I like your logic here around these sort of domestic champions, because they really, and Outsurance, I hadn't thought of it. I mean, locally in South Africa, we all know Outsurance. You might not use them, but you know them. You've heard the adverts. You know the business model. You understand how it works. There must be,
right.
When we think about emerging markets, we are so busy looking at demographics and urbanization and an expanding middle class. And all of those are true. Absolutely, they are. But within that, it's those champions that we're looking for in every emerging market. Is going to have them.
Right. And you know what the most important thing here is, that these flying geese are not really interested in the demographic dividend around the world.
Yeah.
They're interested in the income dividend. So they first tend to go to countries that are really well aligned to their price strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see, most companies at one point or another end up in the United States, because the United States has the highest income per capita consumer in the world. Look at South Africa breweries, right? It started off in South Africa where the volumes are great. The volumes are great, but the per capita consumption and the per capita spend on alcohol is highest in the United States. Now look at how successful Anheuser-Busch is with the combination of South Africa breweries and Budweiser or Bud, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the group now spans countries like, Brazil, Argentina, obviously the whole continent of Africa, some in Eastern Europe. And this is pursuing not just the numbers of people who drink, but the ability to spend and direct, and then compete for share of customer wallet.
And that's a point I hadn't thought of, is that selecting the country to which they go to is instructively important. Think again back to Outsurance, Australia, now looking at Ireland. The new market is critical in terms of getting it right.
Well, I mean, think about why ShopRite, what a dominant business ShopRite is, by the way. But think about why ShopRite expanded so rapidly into the rest of the continent and then had to come back, had to unwind most of its expansions. I think ShopRite only now makes, I think, about 5-8% out of the rest of the continent. This is the reason. It's because the logistical costs of taking a food product from here to Nigeria outweighed the benefits of being in Nigeria.
Yeah.
So there was definitely no problem about demographics in Nigeria. Plenty of people. But the cost of food, because of the logistical problems you had to overcome, were just too high. So they said, you know what? We can't be delivering food so far away. How about we do 60-60? So they learned from that logistical nightmare that actually there's the last mile within South Africa that is just as profitable. Well, actually, even more profitable, but with less headache. So you learn some lessons from a failure, and then you turn those lessons into it. Such a devastating competitive tool. Now look at 60-60.
Yeah.
Who can compete with that, really? Who can compete with that?
The short answer is we're learning nobody. Bottles is struggling. I can't remember what Woolies even calls their one, and Spa. The short answer is, but I like that. They tried the distance, and then they realized it was at home. It was in that last mile.
Right. And let me tell you something else, too, Simon. The really beautiful thing about these flying geese is when we compare company by company across emerging markets, so you take Woolworths in South Africa, ShopRite in South Africa, compared to Walmart.
Mm.
If I were to tell you that over the past 20 to 30, I think 30 years, actually, ShopRite outperforms Walmart on every metric.
Yeah.
Whether it's earnings growth, whether it's return on capital, whether it's total returns on the stock market, and you compare that, you know, pound for pound, you compare ShopRite to Walmart, you compare Outsurance to Progressive Core, you compare Standard Bank to Wells Fargo.
Mm.
You just keep doing that. You find that actually there are a few companies in South Africa and across the emerging markets that deserve a place in a global equity portfolio. You give up nothing but currency, nothing but currency. So your only weakness is, what do I do with rand depreciation? But other than that, pound for pound, you have not compromised on quality at all.
Yeah, I've run the metrics. I mean, ShopRite is just the best grocer in the world. I mean, it absolutely is. And as you say, it
absolutely
is. Yeah, and it's easy. We'll leave it there. Hello, Gerosi, CIO, First Avenue Investment Management. Always appreciate the early morning insights. Give your money smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Some thoughts from me on the IPO hype cycle, and is it throwing retail investors under the bus? So I thought about this topic yesterday afternoon, you know, timelines and shows. And then, of course, SpaceX scrubbed the launch of their Starship rocket after engine failure. That happened last night. But now suddenly, for the first time ever, we have launches that have share prices attached to them. But that's not the story I want to look at. Celsius, IPO price, $26.50. Now, $24.27. Optasia, IPO price, R19. Now, R14.50. Both of those ran after the IPO. They went higher, but they drifted low. SpaceX, just over a month ago, IPO price, $135. What did it get to? $220. Closed last night, $131.11. Aftermarket, $126 and some change. You bought SpaceX at any point in the market. If you haven't sold, you've lost money. Now, to be clear, in all of those examples, yeah, there are people who bought, sold at higher prices, and are happy. But if you were a buyer and holder, you are underwater in all of those examples. And that, to be clear, is what we're seeing. Now, there are some exceptions. WeBuyCars and Boxer both worked incredibly well. But those were interesting. They were not a traditional IPO. They were exits by distressed owners, Transaction Capital and Pick and Pay. Bending Spoons out of Milan, Italy, a tech stock there, they're still above IPO price, but it's very early days. I think the lesson we're learning here is really simple. And to be clear, it's not a new lesson, but that IPO is less about opportunity to get into exciting new listings and more about exit liquidity event for existing shareholders. Go look at the Airbnb. I think Airbnb is flat over the 5, 6, 7 years of its listing. IPOs are exciting. They're thrilling, but seemingly they are not always good investments. That's it for today. Chatting with Perkley Radenhaes yesterday. He, of course, Herenia Capital Advisors. Luxury stocks, after that strong Richemont numbers, we asked if you were holding any. Just over half said not for you. The rest split between, great sector, and saying, selectively some luxury. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7.
Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. AI, opportunity, or source of risk?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.